You know what? Take this whole video, chop it up, and you can make a YouTube poop out of me. I can say whatever the hell you want.
Okay.
Graham Hancock is, well, a bae.
Well, hello and welcome back to the next episode of Dedunking. I want to thank all of you so very much that voted in the poll. There's the results right there, and of course I'll be honoring those. So this video will be Ancient Apocalypse Episode 3, me responding to Mini Minuteman's debunking of Graham Hancock's Episode 3 there. And, you know, Milo didn't send you guys here for me to be all nice to him or for me to, like, pull punches. Me and him are buds, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to, like, pretend that I don't see what I see, right? I mean, he may think that
I am my own worst critic,
but in reality,
he has me.
So stick around till the end, because I will guarantee you, no matter what side you are on this, you're going to have to at least admit that I got him on this one, big time.
The later part of the episode, he talks to Dr. Anton Mifsud, who talks about how they found Neanderthal teeth in one of the caves there. However, since Neanderthals went extinct like 40,000 years ago, it doesn't really prove his point much. Graham Hancock really loves that there were these Neanderthal teeth found in the Gardalam cave. He harps on and on about how not enough research was done on it, and how an attack on the paradigm is an attack on archaeologists. I promise you, there is no one on Earth who would not want their name on the discovery of those Neanderthal teeth. So he talks to Dr. Anton Mifsud, who paid to have the teeth dated and was able to prove that they were in fact Neanderthal teeth. Again, all very interesting. Does not prove a damn thing, unless you're saying that the Atlanteans were Neanderthals.
You know, it seems to me that his point was really clear here. He's saying that these teeth haven't been reported on properly by science, and he's really right. If you look into it, Malta has kind of the same issue that you see in Indonesia and other places in the world where the reporting on archaeology, you know, tourism might be a little bit more important than the archaeological side of it. And so they don't really have a problem claiming anything, even though that, like, archaeology will say that they didn't build all these megalithic temples we're going to talk about in a second. The Maltese government and shit wants to claim them. So we have the same kind of issue going on here, where they don't want to push these teeth back any further than 5000 BC, but other people identify them as Neanderthal. Allow me to read here a little excerpt. In 1917, two very special human molars with a wide extension of their pulp cavity and fused fang were found in Neolithic excavations in Malta. As he had observed such a dental morphology of Neanderthal man in Jersey, Arthur Keith called that pterodontism and claimed that it was a characteristic between Malta and the Italian coast, he asserted Neanderthal man had lived in Malta. The theory has never been corroborated, and pterodontism is not so characteristic as supposed by Keith. Furthermore, it might be an individual pathological feature. Up to now, there is no proof of human beings in Malta before about 5000 BC. So they totally look like Neanderthal teeth, but they're not Neanderthal teeth, except they are Neanderthal teeth, and they even look like it, and it just depends on who you ask, and that's a huge problem, and that's what he was getting at. Like I said, there's a lot of tourism, a lot of nationalism on the island. I mean, if you look online, it's kind of hilarious. They're like, oh yeah, Paul? Yeah, Paul was on Malta. It says so in the Bible. Totally, he was here. Yeah, Homer's Iliad. Yeah, those guys showed up too. Oh yeah, the shit off the coast. It's like, it's way out there. You should go check it out. Come visit Malta. That's basically all they get at with all that stuff. He is right in pointing out that these teeth showcase that you can't really trust the science, especially when it comes to dating on this island.
So the cart ruts are pretty interesting. They're these long worn paths in Malta's stone that look like cart ruts. Now, it's kind of hard to date these considering it's just negative space in a rock, but estimates say that they're probably about 2,500 years old. And no one really knows exactly what they are. There is theories that they truly are cart ruts, but there's also theories that it's irrigation or something like that, but no one really knows for sure. Well, Graham Hancock claims that he has researched the cart ruts himself and has scuba dived to cart ruts which are 25 meters underwater. Now, he doesn't show these cart ruts, he doesn't go to them, and he doesn't cite where they are, so I have no way of actually confirming this, but I'm gonna just assume he's telling the truth here. He says that finding cart ruts 25 meters underwater proves that this site dates to, everyone say it with me, 12,800 years ago. This is the sea level rise at the end of the last ice age. At about 25 meters, we're only looking at a date of around 7,000 years ago, which is really weird, because Graham Hancock is saying that this site is 12,800 years old. About 12,800 years ago, the sea levels were about 80 meters or 250 feet lower than they are today. And Malta would have looked like this. Instead of being two islands, it would have been one. So if Graham had suddenly found cart ruts that were 80 meters underwater, I'd be a lot more inclined to agree with him about this date. We also don't know if this is at high tide or low tide, which is something that could fluctuate the water by multiple feet and be able to change this date by thousands of years. But let's just assume 25 meters is right. Great, then that would place it to be about 6,000 years ago. And Malta would look like that, by the way.
So let's take a look at this map real quick. Yeah, on the East Coast, there is all kinds of land in the old days. What about on the West Coast? You don't have to go very far before you're in deep water again, huh? Wasn't you saying something about you don't know because Hancock didn't say where he dove to see that? So you're just going to kind of have to assume the worst in order to assume that... Okay, time for the heavy hitter. Now, a lot of you have been commenting and arguing with me in the comment sections, which again is great, and a lot of you have seen these arguments, and one of the things that I repeatedly feel like I end up saying is, you guys don't feel like you know what you're talking about here. And I'm not trying to be a dick. A lot of times it's just how it feels. It's like you're like misrepresenting this so badly that I don't even know where to begin to explain this. I use the crocoduck analogy. It's like Kirk Cameron trying to argue against evolution with the crocoduck. It's like, how the fuck do you even respond to that? You'll hear like Graham Hancock and a lot of all these other people will say that like archaeologists don't get archaeoastronomy. And I'm going to show you this in the very, very real way right here, right now. All right, so I'm going to give my boy here plenty of rope, and then I'm going to tighten it the fuck up.
Hancock works with Lenny Rijik, who studied the directions and orientations of Malta's temples. But you know how I told you that there's like 19 other temples on Malta that are sort of similar to Menidra and to Gigantea? Well, the theory is that every single one of them is oriented towards the star Sirius. And they back this up by saying that every time Sirius would wander across the sky, they would build a new temple and have the doorway facing at where Sirius would rise, which is why almost all the temples on Malta are facing the same direction with mild inconsistencies in the way that the doorway faces. All of these temples being built to be oriented towards Sirius, and that's how they're going to date the temples. So how do they go on to support that all of these temples were built around the same time? Well, they take their theory that they all point towards Sirius. They look at where Sirius was in the sky. Boom, what do you know? All the temples were built before 12,800 years ago.
I've been waiting for this one because this is a really fun debunk. This is a really fun debunk. So the theory is that all of these temples have their doorways facing towards Sirius. Uh-huh. And then every time Sirius would wander across the sky a little bit, they would build a new temple and have that doorway facing towards Sirius. But what you'll notice is that all of the doorways face in pretty much the same direction. And if we do a little map of Malta here, all of the doorways face more or less in this direction at like slight variations in angle. Okay, so what else happens in that direction? Let's, I don't know, throw some spitballs out there. Any suggestions from the class? What's that? The sun? Wow, that's a phenomenal idea. You're really going somewhere, kid. But not only can I semi-prove or at least support this theory, I can also absolutely dunk on the star theory. This is the sun. This is a star. This is a doorway. What do all three of these things have in common? They are all things that Graham Hancock has a loose understanding of. If I was building a temple, and I had a doorway that was big enough for a grown-ass man to walk through, I don't really know how precise I would be able to be with aiming the doorway at a particular star in the sky, especially when that star doesn't even really cast that much light. It's mostly just a glowing dot. However, the sun is, you know, dummy bright, and so being able to have this massive open doorway that is pointing more or less in the direction of the sun and allowing all that light to flood through would be the most important thing you could have. And tangential to that is, how would you even orient a doorway towards a star? Like, it is a pinprick in the sky that's constantly moving. Let's say, hypothetically, these temples, instead of having a giant doorway, had a massive stone block that they had managed to bore a hole through. And the theory was that if you look through this hole at a certain time, you know, summer solstice, winter solstice, whatever, you would be able to see Sirius through it. Now that, I could get behind, because that is very precise, it is meant to line up with the star. But you can't use that argument when you're talking about something that's as big as a frickin' doorway. It's just a really painfully weak argument.
Okay, let's just get into this. There's three points in an astronomical alignment on the ground. There is the alignment of inside of the temple, which I'll post a screenshot right here, and you can see how they dissect these things. It's really not complicated. You're standing in the fucking thing. You just look around. Okay, here's the center, and looking out the door. Then there'll be an object in the distance, and I'll post a picture here, and you can see how you would use that to highlight the star. And then there is the doorway that you use. It's an alignment. It's like you use three dots, and that's the sight. And every so often, that star goes through, and the gun shoots. Do you follow? Do you see how this works? But you know what? Don't take my word for it. I'm a fucking electrician, right? Let's see what we got here. In their analysis of the data, the authors naturally considered the rising and setting positions of the sun at the solstices and equinoxes of the moon and standstills, but they also accepted in detail the verdict of archaeologists not only as to the sequence in which the temples were constructed, but also as to the actual dates, and it was against that background of these dates that they studied the stellar risings and settings, the positions of which change as a result of the precession of the Earth's axis. They found that one axis of the triple temple at Manjaro, figure 3, faced exactly towards equinox sunrise, but commendably they declined to accept this as anything more than chance coincidence unless and until additional evidence was forthcoming. They adopted a similarly skeptical attitude to other tempting possibilities. Of these, the most promising was perhaps the alignment of a number of temples towards the rising or setting positions of the bright stars Alpha Centauri and Beta Centauri when the precessional changes in these positions were taken into account. This interpretation placed the construction of the temples into what archaeologists considered the correct sequence, but did not get dates of sufficient accuracy to satisfy the authors, who concluded one cannot be confident this alignment was intended by the builders. At the end of the paper, when they are determining what their findings are, they determined that Y Crucius is the star that Giganta is pointed at, is aligned towards, I should say, correct? I hope I'm saying the name of the star right. Now, our suggestion, which in the present state of knowledge it can be nothing more, is that the temples were intended to face those stars, accounts well for the surprising construction. They figured the temples were facing stars. They did not figure the temples were aligned towards the sun. They figured that they were intended to face these stars. Who wrote this crazy-ass paper? Science History publication provided by the NASA Astrophysics Data System by G.F. Sirio, M. Hoskin, and F. Ventura, and it's hosted on harvard.edu. That whole door shenanigans does not do anything at all to debunk that hypothesis. As a matter of fact, it just shows a blatant ignorance of how they go around doing this stuff. I wasn't able to confirm whether or not her hypothesis is correct about Sirius being the target point of all of these different temples. But the people that I just showed you that were doing that study in 1992, as I showed you, they said that they weren't looking at that time period. They were looking at the time that the archaeologists said they should be. Unfortunately, she's got one video that I can find talking about this, and it's one of those conference things, and she's trying to sell a book, so she never dumps the real meat of the data. Fucking hour and a half of my life wasted. And I don't really want to buy her book, but I'm probably going to, just so that I can see this shit. Eventually I'm going to have to learn how to use that dang star software too, because I see like so many different takes on this stuff anymore that I just want to figure it out my damn self. So, and that's going to do it for this episode of Dedunking. Thank you very much for watching this far. Don't forget to like and subscribe and do all those other fancy things. I've got some social media links that I'm starting to put down there, and I'm working on getting a Discord set up. I'm a little old, so some of these things, it's a little bit overwhelming. Again, single parent, so I'm just trying to juggle all this together, but we're making it happen, and I appreciate the support so far. So keep clicking buttons and sharing with your friends and all that happy crap, and then we'll do this again in the near future. Have a good day.
This is what evolutionists have been searching for hundreds of years. All right? And if you find one of these, you could become rich and famous. So here's some transitional forms. This is called the crocodile.